Okay, so we'll go on to agenda paper six. So this paper addresses a submission that's about whether insurance acquisition cash flows and the related revenue are recognised applying paragraph B125 of IFRS 17. If those cash flows cannot be recovered from the cash flows of the portfolio of insurance contracts. The analysis in the paper observes that the requirements for insurance acquisition cash flows treat those cash flows in the same way as other cash flows incurred in fulfilling insurance contracts. And also that IFRS 17 does not require an entity to separately identify whether it will recover insurance acquisition cash flows at each reporting date. To demonstrate the mechanics of how the requirements work in various scenarios, we've included a number of examples in the appendix to this paper. These examples also illustrate scenarios where there is a change in the total expected insurance acquisition cash flows. So with that, I'd like to ask TLG members for your views on the analysis in this paper.
Jessica.
Thank you. I agree with both questions. The analysis on both questions. But there is a point I would like to make about the additional point at the end of the paper for the comment made by the SB staff on paragraph B65H. That troubled me a little bit because we've seen around the world that the use of these type of commissions, which are contingent on effective persistency of the customer in the contract, is quite widespread, and it makes sense from a business perspective. And most of the times, there is no real other service that the intermediary has done other than to find that customer, make sure that he's meeting the contract that he's selling to the customer is meeting the needs of that customer and effectively matching the insurance company with that particular individual. The insurance company will then say, I'm going to give you an amount when the contract is signed, but then I will continue to pay you the rest of your remuneration for that service all the time, as long as this customer remains my customer, effectively. In my analysis, that was an acquisition cost, all of it. The first payment, but also the subsequent payments. And I was always troubled by the words in B65H, but I always interpreted as referring to only those situations that are not very frequent, but they do happen, when the agent actually does something extra to the agency's, the traditional agency service. Like, for example, the insurance company says to the agent, you find me the customer, but then you also have to effectively execute the collection service for me. That is separate. It's not related to the actual finding of the customer and the creation of the relationship between the two parties. It is a subsequent obligation that the agent agrees to fulfill. And then I would say, yes, absolutely. Out of the total compensation the agent will get, there is a portion that is for doing the agency work, and another portion is to do the collection work. And in my mind, it was always that portion only that would have been classified as a maintenance expense in the fulfillment cash flow calculations. But then I saw the additional point in this paper, and I started to doubt that maybe I was reaching the right conclusion. And so I want to ask the question today in TRG to see whether others have had a different perspective, and at least I can figure out two alternatives to the one I described, which is my preferred one. One alternative is only the first payment is actually acquisition cost. All the other payments, because they come later and they are dependent on the continuous payment of the premium by the customer, will be maintenance. Or the whole of it is actually not acquisition cost because of that characteristic of making the payments of this commission dependent on the customer persisting in the contract. Is this something that maybe the staff could expand? It's a very short comment. I felt that given the widespread use of these structures, some discussion around it could be helpful for the people working on the implementation at the moment. Thanks.
Well, I was just going to say that what I read here is what you thought.
It's not
confirms what you were saying, I think, rather than disagrees what you were saying.
You need to look at the commission and see if it meets the definition of insurance acquisition cash flows. It does. If it doesn't, it goes into other fulfillment cash flows.
Even if it's called commission.
If it is, we had this discussion today about title. No title. So I think that you need to see whether this amount meets the definition of insurance acquisition cash flows. The fact that it's included in this paragraph does not mean that it doesn't.
It can never.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there could be circumstances that it is. So that was the purpose of this paragraph.
When I discussed that, so one thing I wanted to recall also from the Hong Kong discussion we had is that people then said that, and I at the time I said, well, I think possibly yes, but I'll ask the question. They all have been through the implementation of IFRS 15 at the moment, particularly insurance brokers. And obviously, in IFRS 15, a broker receiving this money will have to say, okay, what am I paid for? Mm-hmm. What performance obligations have I fulfilled by being compensated with this consideration? And if I am doing what they call the post-placement obligation, which is I'm effectively, in substance, agreeing to collect the money and pass it on to the insurance company. That's a service different from intermediation. Then IFRS 15 will say, well, that commission, although maybe formally one amount, should be analyzed against the two performance obligations as IFRS 15 requires. And so they were asking me, does it mean that we got to do the same also from an insurance payment perspective? And my tentative view was yes, because that's what the substance is. But I said I was going to raise that so then we can have at least a consider for inclusion in the record.
Not that 15 applies.
No. But the logic of effectively looking at what it is, the substance, that's what they were asking. Not the application of 15, no, you're right. That's not what I meant.
Hagit's response, I'd stick with that. Doesn't meet the definition.
Okay, JP.
Thank you. I think I have the same view with the ICE step, that the revenue and expenses are recognized regardless of whether the insurance acquisition cash flows are recoverable or not. But at this time, I would like to point out that, you know, I don't think it is clear in B125 and BC179 and BC180 about the period over which revenue and expenses should be recognized. Based on the staff's view in Agenda Paper 6 and Paragraph 125, it is my understanding that expenses and revenues of insurance acquisition cash flows should be recognized over the entire contractual period. Looking at the B125, it is written as each reporting period. But however, in BC179 and BC180, ICE used the term coverage period here to discuss recognition of revenues and expenses related to insurance recovery acquisition cash flows. I personally think that insurance acquisition cash flows are the consideration paid to the third party for initiating insurance as well as investment process. Therefore, I think it is reasonable to recognize revenue and expense over the entire contractual period instead of coverage period. I think this issue is related to accounting model. You know, according to accounting model, the period of recognition is different.
By reasonable, do you mean reasonable interpretation of the words in the standard?
I think,
or is that a view of how you would like to see it? Because this sounds like the discussion on coverage units that we had in May.
Yes, I know.
And it sounds like we sort of just, yeah.
But here, you know, in B125, it used the term each reporting period. As a non-native speaker, when I look at this term,
it looks like period as you provide services. The service that you provide is covered. It's not, for example, claim settlement. This is not a service you provide, if this is what you had in mind. So it's in each period that you provide service under the contract, not talking about that other discussion of investment components, talking about insurance contract. A plain vanilla insurance contract is the period of coverage.
Yeah, here is that, you know, thinking of the definition of insurance acquisition cash flows, those costs were expensed for, you know, services that we are providing. But in that sense, I think an investment service also, you know, was for those insurance acquisition cash flows.
There's a different discussion, I heard only agreement about what the staff has concluded.
I would like to clarify on these words in B
1 and 5, and
so again, I think B1 to 5. Just to your point, not talking about contracted with investment components, you need to look at the other requirements for revenue recognition. For example, B1 121 that talks about the period that you provide the promised services. Promised services of an insurance contract is provision of coverage, not, you know, settlement of claims. So you need to look at this in this perspective. So I thought it's quite clear when you read all the requirements and not one of the pieces in isolation.
Yes. Frankly speaking, you know, most Korean insurers are now, you know, allocating these insurance acquisition cash flows over the entire contractual period.
That is a change.
When we are designing our system. But thanks to this in the TRG discussions, I realized that we are wrong. So what I would like is to clarify on the period.
Okay.
Sally?
Okay, thank you. I agree with all those things, staff analysis in principle. And I don't have a problem with the example, first four example. But when we discussion, we're struggling a little bit when we think about 2 years. But I know it's a different fact pattern. But even look back to page 31 for the example 7, just slightly different understanding for the change of trenches. In the second line, it's said to be change related to future services in this case. To me, acquisition cost is beneficial for the whole report and for the whole period. So for the 120 should be beneficial to the whole period from 1st of January to end of December. So if it's a changer of 20, even it's paid, I don't think it matters when it's the acquisition cost is paid the first day or the last day. So change of 20 should be half belongs to the previous period. In this case, it's first half year. And then another 10 is belong to the future services. If so, this table might not be corrected if consider about that. And if so, they'll come back to Gail's question about 04, or whether this one is not adjusted to CSM and go into P&L directly, you end up with some figures what not sounds are right, because the CSM will be amortized over 2 periods, in this case 2.5 years. And for the first half year, you already recorded the 10 into the P&L, and then amortize CSM over the 2.5 years, you will record another 5 years into the first half. So that was something worth, even not look at the 2 years for the example. And also, if we come back to the page 29, for example, 6, and I understand that C12, the insurance revenue A880, the balancing figure, it's set below. But if you look at into detail, it's quite difficult to get. Because the claim is 700, and the acquisition cost is 120, and you cannot adjust CSM before it's amortized. So CSM is 200, so you cannot get to 1,000, right?
No, so no, I think not, but yes. Let me try to. Oh, sorry, have you not finished? So there are two things I picked up from your comments. One of them is that CSM adjustment and the order of how you do stuff when you do the subsequent measurement. The standard is quite clear, and there was a lot of debate and discussion when the standard and the requirements were set, that you first do your CSM adjustment and then you do your allocation. And some people noted at the time that it means that something will go to past periods, but this is the outcome of the requirements that we have in the standard. So that was well acknowledged. It's nothing, I guess, that it's new. So I think your message is consistent with what we had in the past, but the requirements are quite clear on this. I think your other point is a fair point with respect to assuming that the changes in insurance acquisition cash flows relate to the future. This is what we assumed in this example. We have requirements in B96 that we mentioned in this paper. You need to see whether you have experience adjustment that relates to premiums that actually belongs to future service together with insurance acquisition cash flows. need to apply judgment and see whether the insurance acquisition cash flows that go with this premium actually relate to future or to past. So I think that that example, assume it relates to future period, and this is how we work out the mechanics. But I think that paragraph B96 provided with that guidance on how you make that assessment.
But is that, if I don't know if I'm wrong, but in this fact pattern, it's only said that you change your estimation and then you pay the 120 instead of 100, and this is still acquisition cost. If it's acquisition cost, it's in most of cases, it will be beneficial for the whole period.
So I think so. This is example assumes. So if it's not clear, it assumes that it relates to future and it illustrates the mechanics of how it works. Mm. The whole idea of this example is to show how the mechanics work. So it assumes it relates to future. It does not determine that in all circumstances it will.
That's why when we think about 2 years, the figures come out to be very strange, and some figures cannot go into the right line. Just if you can look that
a little bit. Okay.
Kevin?
I just wanted to highlight again something that I had not realized till I read this paper, because I think these papers are very long. People maybe sometimes miss the examples and don't get all the way to the end.
don't get to the end. It's a very good paper.
You know, because you read the text and then you go, oh, I can ignore the appendix, but that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
It relates, I think, to one of the questions Sally raised. It's example 6. And I think one of the things that for me was useful clarification is that when your acquisition costs expected or different to the actual, it's actually the actual that you use as your revenue gross up. So the revenue gross up and amortization is for the actual, not the expected. I think that was.
It's kind of the total expected insurance. So what happened and what you still expect to happen, and that is being recognized. Because at the end of the day, you need to have a cost that reflects your actual.
Yeah, and I think you could still get the cost, but just, you know, the gross ups net off. So you could still get that gross up. You can still make a different conclusion, and so I think this is useful clarification that it's the 120 in example 6, yeah. It's not 100.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kevin. Mary?
So I don't have a very profound point to make, but I found these examples, if you work through them, are a very helpful illustration of how B123 and B125 work together.
Yeah.
Which I think is what they were intended to do. And you've almost written something that's a little bit like an accounting textbook for us, which usually I wouldn't trouble the staff with, but actually I found it was very helpful to see how those two paragraphs work together.
So, John?
Thank you. Yeah, welcome the clarification in the paper. The outcome are mostly in line with our understanding. I have the same observation as regarding example 6, as mentioned earlier, it seems, again, this one line is missing in paragraph 106 here, if you apply that. Yeah.
It's so, the same comment
same
about
same, same as the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Okay, thanks for that. Mazilka?
Just a quick one. I want to echo what Kevin and Mary said. I found the examples extremely useful. And I think the only thing probably to flag is this example 6, because of the way that the revenue recognition paragraph says that in your revenue side, if you start from basic principles, not from the, you know, using the balancing change number, you work with expected expenses at the beginning of the period. Acquisition expenses are probably the only kind of exception that you have to bring in the actual because of the way that you allocate. So I welcome that illustration because it clarifies it, it makes it very easy. And I think, you know, my only kind of criticism is that probably example 6 should have illustrated how using basic principles you get to the 880 in the revenue bit.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. I would suggest when we have only five after three that we maybe have 10 minutes coffee break.
We need the summer.
I think everybody agreed, right?
I like this summer, so.
Okay, before, let me suggest that we have the summary, and I would suggest that we have a coffee break, and then we doing also the next item, because I think we have only a few minutes after three and then doing it until four as scheduled, and then maybe we have the chance tomorrow to get earlier out. Yep. Is that agreed?
Good.
Then we have the summary now before we have coffee break.
A quick one.
I think I would just take away the summary that the agreement with the analysis in the paper, and maybe taking away Sally's point as well that there's also B96A to think about, which talks about whether experience adjustments, including relating to insurance acquisition cash flows, are past or future.
Right.
Okay, we should be back at 3:20.